and I was careful to keep what I considered to be a safe distance from her so I could outrun her if she tried anything weird, which seemed like a possibility because she looked weird. Not like actors pretending to be drug addicts on TV, but like the real ones you saw from time to time, nodding out on park benches or in the doorways of abandoned buildings. I guess New York is a lot better than it used to be, but dopers are still an occasional part of the scenery.
How do I look?
Then she laughed, but not in a happy way.
Don't answer that. But hey, we did a mitzvah once upon a time, didn't we? I deserve more credit for that than I got, but what the hell, we saved a bunch of lives.
I thought of all I'd been through because of her. And it wasn't just because of Terrio, either. She had fucked up my mom's life, too. Liz Dutton had put us both through a bad time, and here she was again. A bad penny turning up when you least expected it. I got mad. You didn't deserve any of the credit. I was the one who made him talk, and I paid a price for it. You don't want to know. She cocked her head.
Sure I do. Tell me about the price you paid, champ. A few bad dreams about the hole in his head? You want bad dreams? Take a look at three crispy critters in a burned-out SUV sometime. One of them just a kid in a car seat. So, what price did you pay?
Forget it, I said, and started walking again. She reached out and grabbed the strap of my tennis duffel.
Not so fast. I need you again, champ. So saddle up.
No way, and let go of my bag. She didn't, so I pulled. There was nothing to her, and she went to her knees, letting out a small cry and losing her grip on the strap. A man who was passing stopped and gave me the look adults give a kid when they see him doing something mean.
You don't do that to a woman, kid.
Fuck off,
Liz told him, getting to her feet.
I'm police.
Whatever, whatever,
the man said, and got walking again. He didn't look back.
You're not police anymore, I said. And I'm not going anywhere with you. I don't even want to talk to you, so leave me alone.
Still, I felt a little bad about pulling her so hard she went to her knees. I remembered her on her knees in our apartment, too, because she was playing Matchbox cars with me. I tried to tell myself that was in another life, but it didn't work because it wasn't another life. It was my life.
Oh, but you are coming. If you don't want the whole world to know who really wrote Regis Thomas's last book, that is. The big bestseller that pulled T away from bankruptcy just in time, the posthumous bestseller.
You wouldn't do that.
Then, as the shock of what she'd said cleared away a little,
you can't do that. It would be your word against Mom's, the word of a drug trafficker, plus a junkie from the look of you, so who'd believe you? No one.
She had put her phone in her back pocket. Now she took it out.
Tia wasn't the only one recording that day. Listen to this.
What I heard made my stomach drop. It was my voice, much younger, but mine, telling Mom that Purity would find the key she'd been looking for under a rotted stump on the path to Roanoke Lake.
Mom, how does she know which stump?
Pause. Me. Martin Betancourt chalked a cross on it. Mom.
What does she do with it?
Pause. Me.
Takes it to Hannah Royden. They go into the swamp together and find the cave.
Mom.
Hannah makes the seeking fire, the stuff that almost got her hung as a witch.
Pause. Me.
That's right. And he says George Threadgill sneaks after them. And he says that looking at Hannah makes George tumescent. What's that, Mom?
Mom.
Never mind.
Liz stopped the recording there.
I got a lot more. Not all of it, but an hour at least. No doubt about it, champ. That's you telling your mother the plot of the book she wrote. And you would be a bigger part of the story. James Conklin, boy medium.
I stared at her, my shoulders sagging.
Why didn't you play that for me before when we went looking for Terrio?
She looked at me as if I was stupid, probably because I was.
I didn't need to. Back then, you were basically a sweet kid who wanted to do the right thing. Now you're 15, old enough to be a pain in the ass. Which could be your right as a teenager, I guess, but that's a discussion for another day. Right now, the question is this. Do you get in the car and take a ride with me, or do I go to this reporter I know on the Post and give him a juicy scoop about the literary agent who faked her dead client's last book with the help of her ESP son?
Take a ride where?
It's a mystery tour, champ. Get in and find out.
I didn't see any choice.
Okay, but one thing, stop calling me champ like I was your pet horse. Okay, champ.
She smiled.
Joking, just joking. Get in, Jamie.
I got in. 55. Which dead person am I supposed to talk to this time? Whoever it is and whatever they know, I don't think it'll keep you from going to jail.
Oh, I'm not going to jail, she said. I don't think I'd like the food, let alone the company.
We passed a sign pointing to the Cuomo Bridge, which everybody in New York still calls the Tappan Zee, or just the Tap. I didn't like that. Where are we going?
Renfield.
The only Renfield I knew was the Count's fly-eating helper in Dracula. Where's that? Someplace in Tarrytown?
Nope, little town just north of New Paltz. It'll take us 2 or 3 hours, so settle back and enjoy the ride.
I stared at her, more than alarmed, almost horrified.
You've got to be kidding me! I'm supposed to be home for supper! Looks like Tia's going to be eating in solitary splendor tonight.
She took a small bottle of whitish-yellow powder from the pocket of her duffel coat, the kind that has a little gold spoon attached to the cap. She unscrewed it, one-handed, tapped some of the powder onto the back of the hand she was using to drive, and snorted it up. She screwed the cap back on, still one-handed, and repocketed the vial. The quick dexterity of the process spoke of long practice. She saw my expression and smiled. Her eyes had a new brightness.
Never seen anyone do that before? What a sheltered life you've led, Jamie.
I had seen kids smoke the herb. I'd even tried it myself, but the harder stuff? No. I'd been offered ecstasy at a school dance and turned it down. She ran the palm of her hand up over her nose again, not a charming gesture.
I'd offer you some, I believe, in sharing, but this is my own special blend. Coke and heroin, 2 to 1, with just a dash of fentanyl. I've built up a tolerance. It would blow your head off.
Maybe she did have a tolerance, but I could tell when it hit her. She sat up straighter and talked faster, but at least she was still driving straight and keeping to the speed limit.
This is your mother's fault, you know. For years, all I did was carry dope from point A, which was usually the 79th Street Boat Basin or Stewart Airport, to point B, which could have been anywhere in the five boroughs. At first, it was mostly cocaine, but times changed because of OxyContin. That shit hooks people fast. I mean, kabang. When their doctors stopped supplying it, the dopers bought it on the street. Then the price went up, and they realized they could get about the same high from the big white nurse, and cheaper, so they went to that. It's what the man we're going to see supplied.
The man who's dead. She frowned.
Don't interrupt me, kiddo. You wanted to know, I'm telling you.
The only thing I could remember wanting to know was where we were going, but I didn't say that. I was trying not to be scared. It was working a little because this was still Liz, but not very much because this didn't seem like the Liz I'd known at all.
Don't get high on your own supply, that's what they say. That's the mantra, but after Tia kicked me out, I started chipping a little, just to keep from being too depressed. Then I started chipping a lot. After a while, you couldn't really call it chipping at all, I was using.
My mom kicked you out because you brought junk into the house, I said. It was your own fault. Probably would have been smarter to keep quiet, but I couldn't help it. Her trying to blame Mom for what she'd become made me mad all over again. In any case, she paid no attention.
I'll tell you one thing, though, Jamie. I have never used the spike.
She said this with a kind of defiant pride.
Never once. Because when you snort, you got a shot at getting clean. Shoot that stuff and you're never coming back.
Your nose is bleeding. Just a trickle down that little gutter between her nose and upper lip.
Yeah, thanks.
She wiped with the heel of her palm again, then turned to me for a second.
Did I get it all?
Uh-huh, now look at the road.
Yes, sir, Mr. Backseat Driver, sir,
she said, and just for a moment she sounded like the old Liz.
It didn't break my heart, but it squeezed it a little. We drove. The traffic wasn't too bad for a weekday afternoon. I thought about my mother. She'd still be at the agency now, but she'd be home soon. At first, she wouldn't worry, then she would worry a little, then she'd worry a lot. Can I call Mom? I won't tell her where I am, just that I'm okay.
Sure, go ahead.
I took my phone out of my pocket, and then it was gone. She grabbed it with the speed of a lizard snaring a bug. Before I'd even quite realized what was happening, she had opened her window and dropped it onto the highway.
Why did you do that?
I shouted.
That was mine!
I'm glad you reminded me about your phone.
Now we were following signs to I-87, the thruway.
I totally forgot. I don't call it dope for nothing, you know?
And she laughed. I punched her on the shoulder. The car swerved, then straightened. Someone gave us a honk. Liz whipped another glance at me, and she wasn't smiling now. She had the look she probably got on her face when she was reading people their rights, you know, perps.
Hit me again, Jamie, and I'll hit you back, and the ball's hard enough to make you puke. God knows it wouldn't be the first time someone puked in this fucking beater.
You want to try fighting me while you're driving?
Now the smile came back, her lips parting just enough to show the tops of her teeth.
Try me.
I didn't try anything, including, if you're wondering, yelling for the creature inhabiting Terrio. Although it was now theoretically at my command. Whistle and you'll come to me, my lad, remember that? The truth is he, or it, never crossed my mind. I forgot, just like Liz forgot to take my phone at first, and I didn't even have a snoutful of dope to blame. I might not have done it, anyway. Who knew if it would actually come? And if it did, well, I was scared of Liz, but more scared of the deadlight thing. Death, madness, the destruction of your very soul, the professor had said.
Think about it, kiddo. If you called and said you were fine but taking a little drive with your old friend Lizzie Dutton, do you think she'd just say, okay, Jamie, that's fine, make her buy you dinner?
I said nothing.
She'd call the cops, but that isn't the biggest thing. I should have gotten rid of your cell right away because she can track it.
My eyes widened.
Bullshit, she can.
Liz nodded, smiling again, eyes on the road again, as we pulled past a double box semi.
She put a locator app on the first phone she gave you when you were 10. I was the one who told her how to hide it so you wouldn't find it and get all pissy about it.
I got a new phone 2 years ago, I muttered.
There were tears prickling the corners of my eyes. I don't know why. I felt, I don't know the word. Wait a minute, maybe I do. Whipsawed. That's how I felt, whipsawed.
You think she didn't put that app on the new one?
Liz gave a harsh laugh.
Are you kidding? You're her one and only, kiddo, her little princeling. She'll still be tracking you 10 years from now when you're married and changing your first kid's diapers.
Fucking liar,
I said, but I was talking to my own lap. She snorted some more of her special blend once we were clear of the city. The movements just as agile and practiced, but this time the car did swerve a little and we got another disapproving honk. I thought of some cop lighting us up, and at first I thought that would be good, that it would end this nightmare, but maybe it wouldn't be good. In her current wired-up state, Liz might try to outrun a cop and manage to kill us both. I thought of the Central Park man. His face and upper body had been covered with somebody's jacket so the bystanders couldn't see the worst of it. But I had seen. Liz brightened up again.
You'd make a hell of a detective, Jamie. With your particular skill, you'd be a star. No murderer would escape you because you could talk to the Vix.
This idea had actually occurred to me once or twice. James Conklin, detective of the dead. Or maybe to the dead. I'd never figured out which sounded better.
Not the NYPD, though,
she continued.
Fuck those assholes. Go private. I could see your name on the door.
She briefly raised both hands from the wheel as if framing it. Another honk.
Drive the fucking car,
I said, trying not to sound alarmed. It probably didn't work because I was alarmed.
Don't worry about me, champ. I've forgotten more about driving than you'll ever learn.
Your nose is bleeding again, I said.
She wiped it with the heel of her hand, then wiped it on her sweatshirt. Not for the first time by the look of it.
Septum's gone, she said. I'm gonna fix it once I'm clean.
After that, we were quiet for a while. 56. After we got on the thruway, Liz helped herself to another bump of her special blend. I'd say she was starting to scare me, but we were well past that point.
Do you want to know how we got here? Me and you, Holmes and Watson, off on another adventure?
Adventure wasn't the word I would have picked, but I didn't say so.
I can see by your face that you don't. That's okay. Long story, not very interesting, but I'll tell you this much. No kid ever said they wanted to grow up to be a bum, a college dean, or a dirty cop. Or to pick up garbage in Westchester County, which is what my brother-in-law does these days.
She laughed, although I didn't know then what was funny about being a garbage man.
Here's something that might interest you. I've moved a lot of dope from point A to point B and got paid for it, but the blow your mother found in my coat pocket that time was a freebie for a friend. Ironic when you think about it. By then, IED already had their eye on me. They weren't sure, but they were getting there. I was scared to death that T would spill the beans. That would have been the time to get out, but by then I couldn't.
She paused, considering this.
Or wouldn't. Looking back, it's hard to tell which. But it makes me think of something Chet Atkins said once. You ever heard of Chet Atkins?
I shook my head.
Soon the great have forgotten. Google him when you get back. Excellent guitarist up there with Clapton and Knopfler. He was talking about how shitty he was at tuning his instrument. By the time I realized I was no good at this part of the job, I was too rich to quit. Same with me and my career as a transporter. Tell you one other thing, since we're just passing time on the good old New York Thruway. You think your mother was the only one who got hurt when the economy went tits up in 08? Not true. I had a stock portfolio, teeny weeny, but it was mine. And that went poof.
She passed another double box, being careful to use her blinker before swinging out and then tucking back in. Considering how much dope she'd ingested, I was amazed, also grateful. I didn't want to be with her, but even more than that, I didn't want to die with her.
But the main thing was my sister, Bess. She married this guy who worked for one of the big investment companies. Probably haven't heard of Bear Stearns any more than you heard of Chet Atkins, right?
I didn't know whether to nod my head or shake it, so I just sat there.
Danny, my brother-in-law, now majoring in waste management, was just entry-level at Bear when Bess married him, but he had a clear path forward. Future was so bright he had to wear shades, if I may borrow from an old song. They bought a house in Tuckahoe Village. Hefty mortgage, but everyone assured them, me included, damn my eyes, that property values out that way had nowhere to go but up. Like the stock market. They got an au pair for their kid. They got a junior membership in the country club. Were they overextended? Fuck yes. Was Bessie able to look down on my paltry 70 grand a year? 10-4. But you know what my father used to say?
How would I thought.
He used to say that if you try to outrun your own shadow, you're bound to fall on your face. Danny and Bess were talking about putting in a swimming pool when the bottom fell out. Bear Stearns specialized in mortgage securities, and all at once, the paper they were holding was just paper.
She brooded on this as we passed a sign that said New Paltz 59, Poughkeepsie 70, and Renfield 78. We were a little over an hour away from our final destination, and just thinking that gave me the creeps, final destination being a particularly gory horror movie me and my friends had watched. Not up there with the Saw flicks, but still pretty fucking grim.
Bear Stearns, what a joke. 1 week, their shares were selling for over $170 a pop. The next, they were going for $10. J.P. Morgan Chase picked up the pieces. Other companies took the same long walk off the same short dock. Guys at the top made it through okay. They always do. The little guys and gals, not so much. Go on YouTube, Jamie, and you can find clips of people coming out of their fancy Midtown office buildings with their whole careers in cardboard boxes. Danny Miller was one of those guys. 6 months after joining the Green Hills Country Club, he was riding on a Green Wise garbage truck. And he was one of the lucky ones. As for their house, underwater. You know what that means?
It so happened that I did. They owed more than it was worth.
A-plus work, Jamie. Go to the head of the class. But it was the only asset they had, not to mention a place where Bess, Danny, and my niece Francine could lay down their heads at night without getting rained on. Bess said she had friends who were sleeping in their camper. Who do you think kicked in enough so they could keep up with the payments on that 4-bedroom white elephant?
I'm guessing you did.
Right. Bess stopped looking down on my 70 grand a year, I can tell you that. But was I able to do it on just my salary plus all the overtime I could glom? No way. Because I got part-time work as security in a couple of clubs? More no way. But I met people there, made connections, got offers. Certain lines of work are recession-proof. Funeral parlors always make out, repo companies and bail bondsmen, liquor stores, and the dope biz. Because good times are bad, people are gonna wanna get high. And okay, I like nice things. I won't apologize for it. I find nice things a comfort, and I felt like I deserved them. I was keeping a roof over my sister's head. After all the years, Bess high-hatted me because she was prettier, smarter, went to a real college instead of a community deal. And, of course, she was hetero.
Liz almost snarled this last. What happened? I asked. How did you lose your job?
IAED blindsided me with a piss test I wasn't ready for. Not that they didn't know all along, they just couldn't get rid of me right away after I pitched in with Terrio. Wouldn't have looked good. So they waited, which I suppose was smart, and then they had me in a box. At least they thought they did. They tried to turn me, get me to wear a wire and all that good Serpico shit. But here's another saying, one I didn't learn from my father. Snitches wind up in ditches. And they didn't know I had an ace up my sleeve.
What ace? You can think I was stupid if you want, but that was actually an honest question.
You, Jamie. You're my ace. And ever since Terrio, I knew the time would come when I'd have to play it.
57. We drove through downtown Renfield, which must have had a big population of college kids, judging from the bars, bookstores, and fast food restaurants on its single main street. On the other side, the road turned west and began to rise into the Catskills. After 3 miles or so, we came to a picnic area overlooking the Wallkill River. Liz turned in and killed the engine. We were the only ones there. She took out her little bottle of special blend, seemed about to unscrew the cap, then put it away. Her duffel coat pulled open, and I saw more smears of dried blood on her sweatshirt. I thought about her saying her septum was gone. Thinking about how the powder she was snorting was eating into her flesh was worse than any Final Destination or Saw movie, because it was real.
Time to tell you why I brought you here, kiddo. You need to know what to expect, and what I expect of you. I don't think we'll part friends, but maybe we can part on relatively good terms.
I doubt that was another thing I didn't say.
If you want to know how the dope biz works, watch The Wire. It's set in Baltimore instead of New York, but the dope biz doesn't change much from place to place. It's a pyramid, like any other big money organization. You've got your junior street dealers at the bottom, and most of them are juniors, so when they get popped, they get tried as juveniles. In family court one day, back on the street corner the next. Then you got your senior dealers who service the clubs, where I got recruited, and the fat cats who save money by buying in bulk.
She laughed, and I didn't get why that was funny either.
Go up a little, and you've got your suppliers, your junior executives to keep things running smoothly, your accountants, your lawyers, and then the top boys. It's all compartmentalized, or at least it's supposed to be. The people at the bottom know who's directly above them, but that's all they know. The people in the middle know everyone below them, but still only one layer above them. I was different. Outside the pyramid. Outside the hierarchy.
Because you were a transporter, like in that Jason Statham movie?
Pretty much. Transporters are supposed to know only two people. The ones we receive from at point A and the ones we turn the load over to at point B. Those at point B are the senior distributors who start the dope flowing down the pyramid to its final destination, the users.
Final destination, there it was again.
Only as a cop? Dirty, but still a cop. I pay attention, okay? I don't ask many questions, doing that is dangerous, but I listen. Also, I have had, anyway, access to NYPD and DEA databases. It wasn't hard to trace the pyramid all the way to the tippy top. There may be a dozen people importing 3 major kinds of dope into the New York and New England territories, but the one I was working for lives right here in Renfield. Lived, I should say. His name is Donald Marsden, and when he filed his taxes, he listed developer as his former occupation and retired as his current one. He's retired, all right.
Lived, I should say. Retired. It was Kenneth Terrio all over again.
The kid gets the picture,
Liz said.
Fantastic. Mind if I smoke? I shouldn't have another bump until this is over. Then I'll treat myself to a double. Really redline the old blood pressure.
She didn't wait for me to give permission, just lit up. But at least she rolled down her window to let the smoke out. Most of it, anyway.
Donnie Marsden was known to his colleagues, his crew, as Donnie Biggs. For good reason, he was one fat fuck. Pardon my political incorrectness. 300 ain't in it, dear. Try 4 1/4. He was asking for it, and he got it yesterday. Cerebral hemorrhage. Blew his brains out and didn't even need a gun.
She dragged deep and shot smoke out her window. The daylight was still strong, but the shadows were getting long. Soon the light would start to fade.
A week before he stroked out, I got word through 2 of my old contacts, this would be Point B guys I stayed friendly with, that Donnie received a shipment from China. Huge shipment, they said. Not powder, pills. Knock off OxyContin. A lot of it for Donnie Biggs' personal sale. Maybe it's a kind of bonus. That'd be my guess anyway, because there really is no top of the pyramid, Jamie. Even the boss has bosses.
This made me think of something Mom and Uncle Harry used to chant sometimes. They had learned it as kids, I guess, and Uncle Harry remembered it, even when all of the important stuff had blown away. Big fleas have little fleas upon their backs to bite 'em, and little fleas have lesser fleas, and so on ad infinitum. I supposed I might chant that to my own kids, if I ever had the chance to have them, that was.
Pills, Jamie. Pills!
She sounded enraptured, which was mondo creepy.
Easy to transport and easier to sell. Huge could mean 2,000 or 3,000, maybe 10,000. And Rico, one of my Point B guys, says they're 40s. You know what 40s go for on the street? Never mind, I know you don't. 80 a pill. And never mind sweating out a run with heroin in plastic garbage bags. I could carry these in a fucking suitcase.
Smoke slithered out between her lips, and she watched it drift away toward the guardrails with their sign reading Stay Back from the Edge.
We're gonna get those pills, Jamie. You're gonna find out where he put them. My guys asked me to cut them in if I got a line on the stuff, and of course I said yes, but this is my deal. Besides, there might not be 10,000 taps. There might be only 8,000 or 800.
She cocked her head, then shook it as if arguing with herself.
There'll be a couple thousand. A couple thousand at least, there gotta be. Probably more. Donnie's executive bonus for doing a good job of supplying his New York clientele. But if you start splitting that up, pretty soon you're stuck with chump change, and I'm no chump. Got a little bit of a drug problem, but that doesn't make me a chump. You know what I'll do, Jamie?
I shook my head.
Make it out to the West Coast. Disappear from this part of the world forever. New clothes, new hair color, new me. I'll find someone out there who can broker a deal for the Oxy. I may not get 80 a pill, but I'll get a lot, because Oxy is still the gold standard, and the Chinese shit is as good as the real stuff. Then I'm gonna get myself a nice new identity. To go with my new hair and clothes, I'll check into rehab and get clean. Find a job, maybe the kind where I can start making up for the past. Atonement is what the Catholics call it. How's that sound to you?
Like a pipe dream, I thought. It must have showed on my face because the happy smile she'd been wearing froze.
You don't think so? Fine. Just watch me. I don't want to watch you, I said. I want to get the hell away from you.
She raised a hand, and I cringed back in my seat, thinking she meant to give me a swat, but she only sighed and wiped her nose with it again.
How can I blame you for that? So, let's make it happen. We're gonna drive up to his house, last one on Renfield Road, all by its lonesome, and you're gonna ask him where those pills are currently residing. My guess would be in his personal safe. If so, you ask him for the combination. He'll have to tell you, because dead people can't lie.
I can't be sure of that, I said. A lie, which proved I was still alive.
It's not like I've questioned hundreds of them. Mostly I don't talk to them at all. Why would I? They're dead. But Terrio told you where the bomb was, even though he didn't want to.
I couldn't argue with that, but there was another possibility.
What if the guy's not there? What if he's wherever his body went? Or I don't know, maybe he's visiting his mom and dad in Florida. Maybe once they're dead, they can teleport anywhere.
I thought that might shake her, but she didn't look upset at all.
Thomas was at his place, wasn't he? That doesn't mean they all are, Liz. I'm pretty sure Marsden will be.
She sounded very sure of herself. She didn't understand that dead people can be unpredictable.
Let's do this. Then I'll grant you your fondest wish. You'll never have to see me again.
She said this in a sad way, like I was supposed to feel sorry for her, but I didn't. The only thing I felt about her was scared. 58. The road ran upward in a series of lazy S-turns. At first, there were some houses with mailboxes beside the road, but they were farther and farther apart. The trees began to crowd in, their shadows meeting and making it seem later than it was.
How many do you think there are?
Liz asked.
Huh? People like you, ones who can see the dead.
How should I know?
Do you ever run into another one?
No, but it isn't exactly the kind of thing you talk about, like starting a conversation with, hey, do you see dead people?
Yeah, I suppose not. But you sure didn't get it from your mother.
Like she was talking about the color of my eyes or my curly hair.
What about your father?
I don't know who he is or was or whatever. Talking about my father made me uneasy, probably because my mother refused to.
You never asked?
Sure, I asked. She doesn't answer. I turned in my seat to look at her. She never said anything about it, about him, to you.
I asked and got what you got. Brick wall. Not like tea at all.
More curves, tighter now. The wall kill was far below us, glittering in the late afternoon sunshine. Or maybe it was early evening. I'd left my watch at home on my nightstand, and the dashboard clock said 8:15, which was totally fucked up. Meanwhile, the quality of the road was deteriorating. Liz's car rumbled over crumbling patches and thudded into potholes.
Maybe she was so drunk she doesn't remember. Or maybe she got raped.
Neither idea had ever crossed my mind, and I recoiled.
Don't look so shocked, I'm only guessing. And you're old enough to at least consider what your mom might have gone through.
I didn't contradict her out loud, but in my mind I did. In fact, I thought she was full of shit. Are you ever old enough to wonder if your life is the result of blackout sex in the backseat of some stranger's car, or that your mom was hauled into an alley and raped? I really don't think so. That Liz did probably said all I needed to know about what she'd become, maybe what she was all along.
Maybe the talent came from your dear old daddy-o. Too bad you can't ask him.
I thought I wouldn't ask him anything if I ran across him. I thought I would just punch him in the mouth.
On the other hand, maybe it came from nowhere. I grew up in this little New Jersey town, and there was a family down the street from us, the Joneses, husband, wife, and five kids in this little shacky trailer. The parents were dumb as stone boats, and so were four of the kids. The fifth was a fucking genius. Taught himself the guitar at 6, skipped 2 grades, went to high school at 12. Where did that come from? You tell me.
Maybe Mrs. Jones had sex with the mailman, I said. This was a line I'd heard at school. It made Liz laugh.
You're a hot sketch, Jamie. I wish we could still be friends.
Then maybe you should have acted like one, I said. 59. The tar ended abruptly, but the dirt beyond was actually better. Hard-packed, oiled down, smooth. There was a big orange sign that said, Private Road, No Trespassing. What if there are guys there? I asked. You know, like bodyguards.
If there were, they really would be guarding a body. But the body's gone, and the guy he had minding the gate will also be gone. There was no one else except for the gardener and the housekeeper. If you're imagining some action movie scenario with men in black suits and sunglasses and semi-autos guarding the kingpin, forget about it. The guy at the gate was the only one who was armed, and even if Teddy still happens to be there, he knows me.
What about Mr. Marsden's wife?
No wife, she left 5 years ago.
Liz snapped her fingers.
Gone with the wind. Poof.
We swung around another turn. A mountain, all shaggy with fir trees, loomed ahead, blotting out the western half of the sky. The sun shone through a valley notch, but would soon be gone. In front of us was a gate made out of iron stakes. Closed. There was an intercom and a keypad on one side of it. On the other, inside the gate, was a little house, presumably where the gatekeeper spent his time. Liz stopped, turned off the car, and pocketed the keys.
Sit still, Jamie. This'll be over before you know it.
Her cheeks were flushed and her eyes were bright. A trickle of blood ran from one of her nostrils and she wiped it away. She got out and went to the intercom, but the car windows were closed and I couldn't tell what she was saying. Then she went to the gatehouse side and this time I could hear her because she raised her voice.
Teddy, are you in there? It's your buddy Liz, hoping to pay my respects, but I need to know where.
There was no answer and no one came out. Liz walked back to the other side of the gate. She took a piece of paper from her back pocket, consulted it, then punched some numbers into the keypad. The gate trundled slowly open. She came back to the car, smiling.
Looks like we got the place to ourselves, Jamie.
She drove through. The driveway was tar, smooth as glass. There was another S-curve, and as Liz piloted through it, electric torches lit up on either side of the driveway. Later on, I found out you call those kinds of lights flambeau. Or maybe that's only for torches like the mob waves when they're storming the castle in the old Frankenstein movies.
Pretty, I said. Yeah, but look at that fucking thing, Jamie.
On the other side of the S, Marsden's house came into view. It was like one of those Hollywood Hills mansions you see in the movies, big and jutting out over the drop. The side facing us was all glass. I imagined Marsden drinking his morning coffee and watching the sunrise. I bet he could see all the way to Poughkeepsie, maybe even beyond. On the other hand, a view of Poughkeepsie, maybe not one to kill for.
The house that heroin built.
Liz sounded vicious.
All the bells and whistles, plus a Mercedes and a Boxster in the garage. The stuff I lost my job for.
I thought of saying, you had a choice, which is what my mom always said to me when I screwed up. But kept my mouth shut. She was wired like one of Thumper's bombs, and I didn't want to set her off. There was one more curve before we came to the paved yard in front of the house. Liz drove around it, and I saw a man standing in front of the double garage where Marsden's fancy cars were. They sure hadn't taken Donnie Biggs to the morgue in his Boxster. I opened my mouth to say it must be Teddy, the gatekeeper. The guy was thin, so it sure wasn't Marsden. But then I saw... His mouth was gone. The Boxster's in there? I asked, hoping my voice was more or less normal. I pointed at the garage and the man standing in front of it. She took a look.
Yep, but if you were hoping for a ride or even a look, you're going to be disappointed. We must be about our business.
She didn't see him. Only I saw him. And given the red hole where his mouth had been, he hadn't died a natural death. Like I said... This is a horror story. 60. Liz killed the engine and got out. She saw me still sitting in the passenger seat, my feet planted amid a bunch of snack wrappers, and she gave me a shake.
Come on, Jamie, time to do your job. Then you're free.
I got out and followed her to the front door. On the way, I snuck another glance at the man in front of the double garage. He must have known I was seeing him because he raised a hand. I checked to make sure Liz wasn't looking at me and lifted my own in return. Slate steps led to a tall wooden door with a lion's head knocker. Liz didn't bother with that, just took the piece of paper out of her pocket and punched more numbers into a keypad. The red light on it turned green, and there was a thud as the door unlocked. Had Marsden given those numbers to a lowly transporter? I didn't think so, and I didn't think whoever she'd heard about the pills from would have known them. I didn't like that she had them. And for the first time, I thought of Terrio. or the thing that now lived in what remained of him. I had bested that thing in the ritual of Chud, and maybe it would come if I called, always supposing it had to honor the deal we'd made, but that was yet to be proven. I would only do it as a last resort in any case, because I was terrified of it.
Go on in.
Liz had put the piece of paper in her back pocket, and the hand that had been holding it went into the pocket of her duffel coat. I took one more glance at the man, Teddy, I assumed, standing by the garage. I looked at the bloody hole where his mouth had been, and thought of the smears on Liz's sweatshirt. Maybe those had come from wiping her nose, or not.
I said, go in.
Not an invitation. I opened the door. There was no foyer or entrance hall, just a huge main room. In the middle was a sunken area furnished with couches and chairs. I later found out that sort of thing is called a conversation pit. There was more expensive-looking furniture placed around it, maybe so folks could spectate on the conversations going on below, a bar that looked like it was on wheels, and stuff on the walls. I say stuff because it didn't look like art to me, just a bunch of splats and squiggles. But the splats were framed, so I guess it was art to Marsden. There was a chandelier over the conversation pit that looked like it weighed at least 500 pounds, and I wouldn't have wanted to sit under it. Beyond the conversation pit, on the far side of the room, was a swooping double staircase. The only one remotely like it I'd seen in real life, as opposed to in the movies or on TV, was at the Apple Store on Fifth Avenue.
Quite the joint, isn't it?
Liz said. She shut the door, thud, and bammed the heel of her hand on the bank of light switches beside it. More flambeau came on, plus the chandelier. It was a beautiful thing and cast a beautiful light, but I was in no mood to enjoy it. I was becoming more and more sure that Liz had already been here and shot Teddy before she came to get me. She won't have to shoot me if she doesn't know I saw him, I told myself. And although this made a degree of sense, I knew I couldn't trust logic to get me through this. She was high as a kite, practically vibrating. I thought again of Thumper's bombs.
You didn't ask me, I said. Ask you what?
If he's here.
Well, is he?
She didn't ask with any real concern in her voice, more like it was for form's sake. What was up with that?
No,
I said. She didn't seem upset like she had been when we were hunting for Terrio.
Let's check the second floor. Maybe he's in the master bedroom, recalling all the happy times he spent there boinking his whores. There were many after Madeline left, and probably before, too.
I don't want to go up there.
Why not? The place isn't haunted, Jamie.
It is if he's up there. She considered this, then laughed. Her hand was still in the pocket of her jacket.
I suppose you have a point. But since it's him we're looking for, go on up. Andale, andale.
I gestured to the hall leading away from the right side of the great room.
Maybe he's in the kitchen. Getting himself a snack? I don't think so. I think he's upstairs. Go on.
I thought about arguing some more or point blank refusing, but then her hand might come out of her jacket pocket and I had a pretty good idea of what would be in it. So I started up the right-hand staircase. The rail was cloudy green glass, smooth and cool. The steps were made out of green stone. There were 47 steps in all, I counted, and each one was probably worth the price of a Kia. On the wall at the top of this set of stairs was a gilt-framed mirror that had to be 7 feet tall. There was one just like it on the other side. I watched myself rise into the mirror with Liz behind me looking over my shoulder.
Your nose, I said. I see it.
Both of her nostrils were bleeding now. She wiped her nose, then wiped her hand on her sweatshirt.
It's stress. Stress makes it happen because all the capillaries in there are fragile. Once we find Marsden and he tells us where the pills are, the stress will be relieved.
Did it bleed when you shot Teddy? I wondered. How stressful was that, Liz? The hall at the top was actually a circular balcony, almost a catwalk, with a waist-high rail. Looking over it made my stomach feel funny. If you fell or got pushed, you'd take a short ride straight down to the middle of the conversation pit, where the colorful rug wouldn't do much to cushion you from the stone floor beneath.
Left turn, Jamie.
which meant away from the balcony, and that was good. We went down a long hall with all the doors on the left so whoever was in those rooms could dig the view. The only door that was open was halfway down. It was a circular library, every shelf crammed with books. My mother would have swooned with delight. There were chairs and a sofa in front of the only wall without books. That wall was a window, of course, curved glass looking out on a landscape that was now turning purple with dusk. I could see the nest of lights that must have been the town of Renfield, and I would have given almost anything to be there. Liz didn't ask if Marsden was in the library either, didn't even give it a glance. We came to the end of the hall, and she used the hand knot in her jacket pocket to point at the last door.
I'm pretty sure he's in there. Open it.
I did. And sure enough, Donald Marsden was there, sprawled on a bed so big it looked like a triple, maybe even a quadruple instead of a double. He was a quadruple himself. Liz had been right about that. To my child's eyes, the bulk of him was almost hallucinatory. A good suit might have disguised at least some of his flab, but he wasn't wearing a suit. He was wearing a pair of gigantic boxer shorts and nothing else. His immense girth, jumbo man breasts, and flabby arms were crisscrossed with shallow cuts. His full moon of a face was bruised and one eye was swollen shut. There was a weird thing stuck in his mouth that I later learned on one of those websites you don't want your mom to know about was a ball gag. His wrists had been handcuffed to the top bedposts. Liz must have only brought two pairs of cuffs because his ankles had been duct taped to the bottom posts. She must have used a roll for each one.
"Behold the man of the house," Liz said.
His good eye blinked. You would say I should have known from the cuffs and the duct tape. I should have known because some of the cuts were still oozing. But I didn't. I was in shock, and I didn't. Not until that single blink.
"He's alive!" "I can fix that," Liz said.
She took the gun out of her coat pocket and shot him in the head. 61. Blood and brains spattered the wall behind him. I screamed and ran out of the room, down the stairs, out the door, past Teddy, and down the hill I ran all the way to Renfield. All of this in 1 second. Then Liz wrapped her arms around me.
"Steady, kiddo, steady."
I punched her in the stomach and heard her woof out a surprised breath. Then I was whirled and my arm was twisted up behind me. It hurt like blue fuck and I screamed some more. All of a sudden, my feet were no longer holding me up. She'd swept them right out from under me, and I went on my knees, yelling my head off with my arm twisted up so high that my wrist was touching my shoulder blade.
"Shut up!"
Her voice, little more than a growl, was in my ear. This was the woman who had once played matchbox cars with me, both of us down on our knees while my mother stirred spaghetti sauce in the kitchen, listening to oldies on Pandora.
"Quit that squalling, and I'll let you go."
I did, and she did. Now I was on my hands and knees, staring down at the rug, shaking all over.
"On your feet, Jamie."
I managed to do it, but I kept looking at the rug. I didn't want to look at the fat man with the top of his head gone.
"Is he here?"
I stared at the rug and said nothing. My hair was in my eyes, my shoulder throbbed.
"Is he here? Look around."
I raised my head, hearing my neck creak as I did it. Instead of looking directly at Marsden, although I could still see him, he was too big to miss, I looked at the table beside his bed. There was a cluster of pill bottles on it. There was also a fat sandwich and a bottle of spring water.
"Is he here?"
She slapped me on the back of my head. I scoped the room. There was nobody but us and the fat man's corpse. Now I'd seen two men shot in the head. Terrio had been bad, but at least I hadn't had to watch him die. "No one," I said.
"Why not? Why isn't he here?"
She sounded frantic. I couldn't think much then. I was too fucking terrified. It was only later, replaying that endless 5 minutes in Marsden's room, that I realized she was doubting the whole thing. In spite of Regis Thomas and his book, in spite of the bomb in the supermarket, she was afraid I couldn't see dead people at all, and she'd killed the only person who knew where that stash of pills was hidden.
I don't know. I was never where someone actually died. Maybe it takes a while. I don't know, Liz.
Okay, she said. We'll wait.
Not in here, okay? Please, Liz, not where I have to look at him.
In the hall, then. If I let go of you, are you gonna be good?
Yes.
Not gonna try to run?
No.
You better not. I'd hate to shoot you in the foot or the leg. That'd be the end of your tennis career. Back out.
I backed out, and she backed out with me so she could block me off if I tried to make a break for it. When we were in the hall, she told me to look around again. I did. Marsden wasn't there, and I told her that.
Damn.
Then,
you saw the sandwich, didn't you?
I nodded. A sandwich and a bottle of water for a man who was bound to his jumbo bed, bound hand and foot.
He loved his food,
Liz said.
I ate with him in a restaurant once. He should have had a shovel instead of a fork and spoon. What a pig.
Why would you leave him a sandwich he couldn't eat?
I wanted him to look at it. That's why. Just look. All day while I went to get you and bring you back. And believe me, a shot in the head is just what he deserved. Do you have any idea how many people he killed with his happy poison?
Who helped him, I thought, and of course didn't say.
How long do you think he would have lived anyway? 2 years? 5? I've been in his bathroom, Jamie. He's got a double-wide toilet seat.
She made a sound somewhere between a laugh and a snort of disgust.
Okay, let's stroll down to the balcony. We'll see if he's in the great room. Slow?
I couldn't have gone fast if I wanted to because my thighs were trembling and my knees felt like jelly.
You know how I got the gate code? Marsden's UPS man. Guy has a hell of a coke habit. I could have slept with his wife if I wanted to. He'd have been happy to supply her if I kept supplying him. The house code I got from Teddy.
Before you killed him.
What else was I supposed to do?
Like I was the dumbest kid in class.
He could identify me.
So can I thought. And that brought me back to the thing this lad, me, could whistle for. I'd have to do it. But I still didn't want to, because it might not work, yeah, but not just that. Rub a magic lamp and get a genie, okay, good for you. Rub it and summon a demon, a dead light, and God might know what would happen, but I didn't. We reached the balcony with its low rail and high drop. I peered over.
Is he down there?
No. The gun prodded me in the small of my back.
Are you lying?
No. She gave a harsh sigh.
This isn't the way it's supposed to go.
I don't know how it's supposed to go, Liz. For all I know, he could be outside talking with
I stopped. She took hold of my shoulder and turned me around. There was blood all over her upper lip now. Her stress must have been very high. But she was smiling.
You saw Teddy.
I dropped my eyes, which was answer enough.
You sly dog.
She actually laughed.
We'll go out and take a look if Marsden doesn't show in here. But for the time being, let's just wait a little. We can afford to. His latest whore is visiting her relatives in Jamaica or Barbados or somewhere with palm trees. And he doesn't get company during the week, does all his business by phone these days. He was just lying there when I came in, watching that John Law court show on TV. Christ, I wish he'd at least been wearing some pajamas, you know?
I said nothing.
He told me there were no pills, but I could see in his face that he was lying, so I secured him and then cut him a little. I thought that might loosen his tongue, and you know what he did? He laughed at me. He said, yes, okay, there was oxy, a lot of it, but he'd never tell me where it was. Why should I? He said, you're gonna kill me anyway. That's when the penny dropped. Couldn't believe I hadn't thought of it before. Muy stupido.
She hit the side of her head with the hand holding the gun. Me, I said. I was the penny that dropped.
Yes, indeed. So I left him a sandwich and a bottle of water to admire, and I went to New York, and I got you, and we drove back, and nobody came, and here we are. So where the fuck is he?
There, I said.
What? Where?
I pointed. She turned, and of course saw nothing, but I could see for both of us. Donald Marsden, also known as Donnie Biggs, was standing in the doorway of his circular library. He was wearing nothing but his boxer shorts, and the top of his head was pretty much gone, and his shoulders were drenched with blood, but he was staring at me, with the eye Liz hadn't punched shut in her fury and frustration. I raised a tentative hand to him. He raised one of his in return. 62.
Ask him.
She was digging into my shoulder and breathing in my face. Neither was pleasant, but her breath was worse.
Let go of me, and I will.
I walked slowly toward Marsden. Liz followed close behind. I could feel her, looming. I stopped about 5 feet away.
Where are the pills?
He replied without hesitation, talking as all of them did, with the exception of Terrio, that was, as if it didn't really matter. And why would it? He didn't need pills anymore, not where he was and not where he was going, assuming he was going anywhere.
Some are on the table beside my bed, but most are in the medicine cabinet. Topamax, Marinox, Inderol, Pepcid, Flomax,
plus half a dozen more, droning them off like a shopping list.
What did he—
Be quiet, I said. For the moment, I was in charge, although I knew that wouldn't last long. Would I be in charge if I called the thing inhabiting Terrio? That I didn't know.
I asked the wrong question.
I turned to look at her.
I can ask the right one, but first, you have to promise you're gonna let me go once you get what you came for.
Of course I am, Jamie,
she said, and I knew she